It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. A brand new broadcast week begins right here on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. But we also spend time at HeadOn.live. Both places have equivalent access to the stream, one-to-one stream. HeadOn.live gets you Ace's stream. White Rose or HeadOnRadioNetwork.com gets you access to the White Rose Society stream. And I am told that both streams are hot and running true. So we'll put that in the win column. It's about 2 minutes past the hour. I spoke too soon. Tune in sounds like a tin can. Sorry. That's tune in, not me. They must be using the lower bandwidth stream. You can always try the FYI Nation stream. They use the HeadOn.live stream, and maybe it'll sound better for you that way, Steve. One hopes. So, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is, like I said, about 2 minutes past the hour, coming up on 3 minutes past. We begin a new broadcast week, a shortened broadcast week, because I am taking to the air this week. Not this air, the, 30,000 feet up air. Thursday, flying to New York, and I'll be there. Well, won't be back until the Tuesday program. So Thursday and Friday and Monday, and I've decided that I probably will be here Wednesday. So we'll have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday programs, okay? And then gone Thursday, Friday, and Monday. I try to reduce the absences as much as I possibly can. So there are things we do at the beginning of the program. One of those things is to thank profoundly the folks who subscribe and set it and forget it every month. And make it possible to meet to defray some of the costs of this program. The rest has to be made up, by mentions during the program. But thank you to Christopher, and thank you very kindly to Angelica in Portland. Thank you, Angelica, so very much. Thank you kindly to Gary up in New York. I'm hoping to meet Gary while I'm up there for our little mini horn-in this Saturday evening. Thank you for being part of it, Gary. Thank you. Thanks to Mark in Minnesota. Thank you very kindly, Mark. And thank you to Paul out in Fremont. Thank you, Paul. That's the overnight crew for last night. Thanks also go out to, let's see here. Thanks go out to Christopher in Oregon, and to Mary Bell in Kansas. Thank you very kindly to John in Maryland, and thank you to Brendan in Oregon, and to Paul from Parts Unknown, and to our buddy Tony in Chico. Thanks very kindly indeed. That's the overnight. Those are the subscribers, and then this evening we've got a thanks to Ralph's. We don't have a $310 fundraising goal. We'll just try to raise. Ciphering. Carry the 12. $285 this evening. And that'll meet the fundraising goal for this Monday. But enough of that. Here at 6 minutes past the hour, we spend a lot of time with political stuff and political personalities. And sometimes, and I know we've felt it here in the community, a little bit of a sense of, what's the phrase that's been bandied about the last couple of weeks? We're done. I thought it would be beneficial to provide an antidote to that. Because as long as the sun keeps coming up and as long as human beings are here, our future will be our children. And I have on the phone with me, I'll bring him on just in a moment here. Y'all have heard from him in the past. He's a dear friend of mine going back to childhood. We were classmates in high school together, that sort of thing. And, hell, we even shared the stage a few times. And his mission in life, and I'm talking about my good friend Steve Trash, is to reinforce the sense of wonder in our children. And he does that brilliantly with magic. And so he has a new project, and it's going to go live. It's going to premiere. That's the word I'm looking for. It's going to premiere on Valentine's Day. And what I'm talking about is Trash TV. And it is a project that has been years in the making. It has been formulating and fulminating in the very busy mind of Steve Trash for a very long time. And it's a chance to make the future better, and to do it with a whole lot of smiles and a lot of laughs. And the neat thing about Steve's magic is that whether you're 5 or a 5-year-old in a 55-year-old's body like me, it can absolutely change your day and change your outlook. So without further ado, my dear friend Steve Trash joins us now. Steve, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for the invite. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. It always is. And I mean, I think I'm safe in saying that Trash TV is, it really has been a long time in the making, hasn't it?
Yeah, we started making the first episode at least 23 years ago. I had this idea that I just wanted to do something fun and funny. So I made the first episode 23 years ago, and it didn't totally click, I didn't really connect with the people that I needed to connect with, and it sort of lay dormant for a while, and then I tried it maybe 15 to 12 years ago, and only in the past year did I sort of pull all of the puzzle pieces together, and I've made it, and I'm so unbelievably happy with it. I'm thrilled with it.
As well you should be. I can confess that I got a sneak peek at it because I'm special.
Well, you're a member of the media, Bob.
I'll be darned. How about that? I think, I may have to get that put on a certificate or something suitable for framing. But it's a delightful effort. And what struck me right off the bat is my day got better just by seeing all those smiling faces and seeing the wonder. And you bring that out in kids and adults too. Is there a nexus between, because you know your focus is on recycling and reuse and you know the magic words, as it were. What is the nexus between that wonder and the idea of participating in making a better world?
I would say there are actually two crisscross points. The first is one of the reasons, and let me explain to some of your listeners, and I know you have lots of listeners because they've shown up to see me live.
Yep, both of them.
That I've done. Both of your listeners? Well, at least more than one have shown up to see me, so I know you have at least more than one. But I do magic tricks with trash. I use found objects. And I started doing that many years ago, somewhere around 1984 or 1985. And what I found was that this idea of doing tricks with trash inverted the way that people looked at the natural world. Like it sort of flipped. Look at that man can do a whole magic show with found objects. Then maybe I could look at the natural world in a different way, look at natural objects in a different way. And this is the exact same device that I'm using with the wonder thing. You know, you comment about your day getting better, having seen those expressions. My wife, it's been very, very stressful for me to create this first episode. It's a really long episode. It's like 38 minutes. And until literally the day before, my crew had arrived from Atlanta. I have three actresses. I have two actresses and two crew members. I had an angel investor who was going to pay to make this television show for me. Television's really expensive. And they sent me an email and said, look, we're really sorry. We had an extraordinarily bad year, and we can't give you the money we promised you 4 months ago. And I was like, this is like a joke email or something, right? But no, it was for real. But I doubled down on this because I knew that the world, everyone in the world right now is angry. They're pissed off. They're angry. They're unhappy. And justifiably so. But anger gets us nothing. Energy gets you something. Forward movement gets you something. But anger gets you nothing. Well, it might actually get you into trouble. And one of the things, my wife said this to me last night. She said, you know, the happiest I have seen you in the last 6 weeks, because it's been rather a pressure cooker. She said, the happiest I've seen you is when you were reviewing cutaways. And I said, you mean of the kids? Like of the audience? And she said, yeah, I hadn't heard you laugh since you were viewing, because let me explain to your audience what happens. There are one or two cameras that are just set on the children's responses, right? And all those cameramen's jobs or camerawoman's jobs are just to simply capture the reaction to the magic. And my wife said, you know, I heard you laugh a couple of times because those children's response was so joy-filled and it was so magical. And to me, Bob, there is some merit in magic tricks just bringing a tiny little bit of happiness and joy. And that's pretty much why I decided, okay, I'm going to throw down. If we don't have the money for it, I will just go borrow that money, and I'll just make it happen. The people are going to be here anyway.
Well, you would never know. I mean, you are a consummate professional, because obviously none of that stress comes through on the screen. And
good.
The cutaways just lit me up, because all those shiny little faces. Wow. One of the neat things about magic is that as sooner or later you go, I wonder how that's done. And for me, I've always kind of pushed back against myself. I mean, I understand that there are logical processes and stuff, but I don't necessarily want to know. I want to revel in the wonder of it. And so you've got a room full of kids who are absolutely wonderstruck in the truest sense of the word. And in that moment, you get to reach out to them and say, you know what? You're not always going to be a kid. You're going to grow up. You can take your kid's spirit with you, but you can have an impact on the world. And that's what I find particularly amazing about your act, so to speak, is that it encourages kids that are just, you know, little kids that we generally don't task with being stewards of their world. You manage to show them that they can take some ownership and they can take some stewardship and they can run with it and have a good time in the process.
That's right. And think of how malleable a young child is. I mean, the audiences that really, really love Steve Trash are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I start losing them around 11 or 12. Interestingly enough, I regain them at college, but that's a totally different story. But I really get them sort of around that 5 to 11. And what I'm doing is exactly, or what I'm attempting to do, I want to take the ego out of it just a little bit, but what I'm attempting to do is exactly what all of the great marketers and advertisers do. I'm attempting to associate good magical feelings with caring for yourself, caring for others, and caring for the environment. This idea, do you remember Mr. Rogers from a million years ago?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was just now thinking about him when you were bringing – yes.
Okay, well – It occurred to me a couple, 3 years ago. Jim is my editor. We did all of this production work locally. And if we have time, I would love to talk about how I was able to make this happen at the Entrepreneurial Center.
Oh, I do.
Locally.
I want to.
Okay. Well, it was only because there were a confluence of events that actually came together to make that happen at the Entrepreneurial Center. But we were talking a couple, 3 years ago, and I said, do you know, children love me. If I'm not even wearing my Steve Trash outfit, I mean, I'm 6'3" without my hat, and I wear this big sort of Mad Hatter top hat, and so I'm huge. I'm enormous, and I have this big motorcycle beard guy. I look like a motorcycle guy. I wear this beard. But children will come and just hug me on the leg, and I thought, I should be able to take that energy and do something like Mr. Rogers did. I mean, Mr. Rogers was a sort of a calming force on television. And I was thinking, like, what happens if I merge that influence that you can have on children with sort of a rockin' attitude? I really like music, so I incorporate music. And I love creating really solid, big magic tricks. Like in the pilot episode, I literally take a young woman, Bethany, she's a lovely actress, and I put her into a box to magically, I'm doing air quotes, magically
we can see those.
Recycle. Of course you can.
It's the magic of radio.
Intelligent audio. It is indeed. So we put her in there to recycle her old dress, right? We put her in the machine because it's the magical recycler. Of course, she's impossibly chopped into pieces, and then her dress is put back together because that's the process of recycling, taking the old and making it new. So what I'm doing is I'm sneaking in the back door, like all great advertisers. If Pepsi wants you to buy something, they're going to associate good feelings with sugar water, right? Otherwise, if they sold it as just sugar water, you'd be like, yeah, it's sugar water with some syrup. No. So I want to do the same thing with that, the sort of the love that Mr. Rogers brought to it, but with a little bit more of a 21st century attitude, a little edgier, you know, maybe a little bit more jump cuts and, you know, a little bit more, I don't know, maybe a little more musical, if you will.
Well, it works. It works. And just to give people an idea of what's gone into it, Steve, I've followed the process of putting it together because you post a lot of stuff on Facebook about your adventure in making this, and people who don't necessarily know the South don't understand that, for instance, they declare martial law when the second snowflake falls down there. And I'm
laughing because that is so true.
I watched the video that you shot getting into your van at Oh Dark 30 and driving with this and narrating as you went, taking your, you know, and by now it's not like, you know, cans of film or cassettes of, you know, it's a freaking jump drive or something, and
right.
Driving it basically 72 miles to Huntsville, where I presume Jim was going to work on it. And you know, waiting for the snow. Is it going to be snow? Is it, because really, third flake madness, and I could hear the stress in your voice of, you know, I got to get it to Huntsville before the crazy stuff starts happening, and to know exactly, you know, how, if you weren't as dedicated to it as you have been, you could have said, tomorrow. But no, you had to go and you had to do, and it was because this project means so very much. And for you to tell me that that your angel investor just sort of pulled out and said, that just, well, you know, running a radio network here that literally stays on the air from month to month, I'm in touch with that. I know a little bit of what you're going through, but to still stick with it, it shows the power of your vision and your determination. You didn't start out wanting to do kids' magic necessarily, did you? I mean, when you left that little Brigadoon northwest corner of Alabama, and took off for the bright lights in the big city, you were gonna work the David Copperfield side of the street, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I moved to New York City, and I was living in New York City working as a busker, as a street performer, 2 days after I graduated from the University of North Alabama. And I had this notion that I was going to work, you know, comedy clubs, which I did. And when I was younger, I was much more interested in the grown-up end of things. I liked doing grown-up magic and big illusions. Didn't really mind doing small illusions. I kind of liked them because I do really well in that kind of an intimate setting. But over the years, it just became really obvious to me that I have a sort of a visceral connection with children. And, you know, describing your radio network and describing my little kids' trash TV, and I have to tell your listeners, I have owned trash TV as a registered trademark for the last 14 years because I find the name hilarious. I mean, to me, trash TV, if you're making something good, I love dumb jokes like that. The fact that I'm not talking trash, the fact that I'm talking about good stuff, the fact that my name is Steve Trash, and I'm totally about protecting the environment and reusing your garbage and using natural resources in smart ways. To me, the trash TV as a name was so appealing. And the funny thing is, children get my name as a joke, and children get Trash TV as a joke name for a TV show much, much more quickly than grown-ups do. It's shocking.
Well, to me, I think about that. I see it ironically, Steve, because most of TV is Trash TV, in my humble opinion. And the fact that you're doing something of such value and calling it, it's almost like you distance yourself from the medium by the way you approach the medium, if that makes any sense.
Go ahead.
No, you please.
Well, the idea, I'm echoing exactly what you just said. We live in an age when I literally cannot watch reality television because it's so false. It's so silly, so contrived. And I'm like, well, I should name my thing exactly the opposite of what it is, because you don't really want to watch a show that's good, wonderful, fun, magic stuff. You know, you don't want to watch that, but Trash TV, that could be interesting.
Exactly. So let me ask where the we've kind of got the origins of the magic. Where does the ecological environmental angle come in?
Well, I, you know, my dad was actually a forester. My mom was a teacher. And I was really, 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 really lucky. Northwest Alabama is, it doesn't have a lot of anything but woods and creeks and places to go to be in those woods. And as a kid, I was fortunate enough to get to go out and be a part of that. And I developed a real connection to the natural world. And as I grew older, I thought it would really be fantastic for me to take my love of theater and my love of acting and make something out of it. And that's when I created Steve Trash as this reuser and recycler, because it was really an outlet for me to make up my own character, because I was living in New York. I was auditioning for shows. I was poor as a church mouse. I mean, I had no money. I literally was busking, you know, passing the hat, performing, and then passing the hat just for enough money to get home on the subway, you know. But I was auditioning for acting jobs, and, man, I couldn't get shot. Nobody wanted to give me an acting job. I was like, well, this whole magic thing, if there's good money in it, I can build my own character. So I built a backstory, and I started thinking, if I could make some interesting character that people would look at and go, well, that's an interesting-looking guy. I wonder what he does. And if I could make the content interesting, Tricks with Trash. I mean, if you think about it, any object that you find is now magical because it's a prop. If it's an M&M wrapper, if it's a bottle cap, it flips on its head what we look at garbage as, right? Because it is it's why I love magic so much. The perfect person in this world to describe to you that we look at the natural world incorrectly is a person that makes people look at stuff incorrectly. That's what illusionists do. And we perceive the natural world as disconnected. We perceive the world as us having the ability to just use resources infinitely, just on and on. You can't possibly overuse them. You can't possibly consume them until they don't exist anymore. Sure, you could throw that pollution out into the environment. It won't have any effect on you. This, all of these ideas are illusions. And the perfect person to cut through that and illustrate, guess what? The way you see the natural world is an illusion is exactly the person that does that for a living. It's not in this hand, it's in this hand.
Precisely. And I talk a little bit on this program about my own predilection for looking at something, and oddly enough, because it's radio, there's a lot of hand gestures involved. So, you know, I've got something out at arm's length here, and I'm looking at it, but if you turn it at an angle and then rotate it through, you know, a few degrees, it looks like something entirely different. And that's basically a big part of the conversation that takes place here. Is what we're seeing, is what we think we're seeing, what we're actually seeing? So you're fostering an intellectual process, a consciousness of the real world in which people live, and giving kids a reason to laugh in a world where that kind of laughter is not exactly easy to come by anymore. With those three things in mind, you mentioned earlier that you wanted to talk about the sort of the backstory to all of this. I think this is probably a good place to go into that.
Okay. Well, the very early on, you and I are somewhat cut from the same cloth. We don't like anyone telling us what to do. We just don't like it, fundamentally.
Those types of people make good entrepreneurs. They don't necessarily make great businessmen. They make good entrepreneurs, people that see a problem and they solve that problem for money. In Northwest Alabama, we call it the Shoals. It's Florence, it's Tuscumbia, it's Muscle Shoals, and it's Sheffield. These four cities that sort of surround the Tennessee River all work as one economic unit. And they have this place called the Shoals Entrepreneurial Center. And the director called me about 8 months ago and he said, "You're not going to believe this, but I have a fully functional television studio that I now have access to. I want you to come and look at it and see if you think it's a thing." And I'm like, I'll be there as
fast as my wheels will go.
Yeah, five minutes ago.
Yeah, exactly. And I go in, it's already got a grid, it's already got lights, it's already got a full green screen in the back. It's got everything that I would need to make projects. So I got super excited, and I said, okay, you do definitely have something here. What are you trying to do with it? He said, what we're trying to do is trying to foster great digital content coming from this part of the world. And I said, oh, you mean making world-class content from the Shoals, kind of like they did in the 60s and the 50s and on into the 70s with the Muscle Shoals sound. He said, exactly. We think the wave is going to happen again, but it will be in the digital realm with video. And I said, okay, let me take a look, see what I can do. And I pulled together all of these elements of these things that I've wanted to do. You know, putting these magic tricks together with the, I have a little segment in the show, I just call it Mr. Rogers, which is sort of a shorthand, we don't call it Mr. Rogers in the show, and it's character things that children need to know, and I do this in a very, it's not like a preachy thing, it's just like me talking to the kids, right, the camera's really close, and in the first episode, my Mr. Rogers is about choosing to be the big you or the little you, because I see in society, so often that people think that they are the choice that they make, whether they choose to be forgiving or whether they choose to be condemning. You know, and the Mr. Rogers segment was about explaining to children that there's a tiny little gap between stimulus and response. And we all get to choose whether we get to be the big you or the little you. And one of my gifts, because I'm not really gifted magically, I've had to work at that. One of my gifts is the ability to break very complex things down so your average 7-year-old can understand it, right?
Yeah.
And
that's one of the things that I do well, and I'm really proud of that one. Now, I don't want to overstate the talk part of Trash TV, because there's some really great magic in it as well.
Oh, there absolutely is. There's no getting around that. But do I still have you?
Oh, yeah.
Because like I said, I sit there, you know, well, thank God it's February, you know, so there's no flies to run in, but I just sit there with my mouth hanging open catching flies. But getting in a world, where, and you know, you can, I welcome you to offer up your thoughts on this. In a world where children at increasingly younger ages are being handed these little things that we run around with in our pockets that seem to be a substitute for human interaction. Was it a challenge to keep their attention, or did they just jump right in?
No. It's children love everything about the character that I am. And I do believe that that will also translate to a tablet. I believe that will translate to your phone, because we know that is where digital content is going. It's going to the children's phone, to the tablet that they own. And I believe that that will translate. The one thing that we know for sure in the next century is the thing that will become valuable will be the thing that cannot be replicated. And what is valuable is live interaction. What is valuable is real, genuine love and emotion. What is valuable is showing that you care for other people by your actions. And so, you know, I think that my little kids' TV show is a way of showing children that in a world that seems nuts, there's always love and there's always wonder and there's always joy and happiness. And if I'm one tiny little channel that is working against the tide, I'm really fine with that, because I feel a calling to do it, and I would feel ashamed of myself if I did not do it, because I think
that sometimes you simply have to stand up and be counted. Your voice needs to say, guys, we are sending so much fear and anger towards our children, we need to give them some relief and a little bit of positive character reinforcement with a little bit of joy and happiness. That's not so bad.
No, that'll go miles, and that was actually the next question. I noticed a very simple message on your set. You've got signs with messages on.
Yeah.
One of them just said, "Don't be mean."
That's it.
And the thing is, things like cyberbullying and real world bullying is, I think back to the time when you and I were young and the rest of our peer group, schoolyard bullying was bad enough,
yeah.
but a kind of meanness, a kind of bullying that follows you home in your pocket, Steve. If you can take a little bite out of that, whether you realize it or not, you may be changing the future. And I think through it all, you're changing the future.
Yes, I agree with that. Remember that. Do you know when parents say to their children, "I don't want you hanging around with those boys. Those boys are not good boys." And it's because parents know either intuitively or intellectually that you become the most like the people that you hang around the most. And if you have a device in your pocket that shows you that being a bully is a good thing, that's social proof for you that being a bully is totally and completely acceptable. I'm going to back up a little bit. I've started closing all of my shows. I started about 2 years ago with that expression: be good, be amazing, and don't be mean. Because to me, it says a whole lot. Be good means to be the kind of person that your mother would want you to be. Be the kind of person that you think you were born to be. Be amazing means close the gap in your skills, in your talents. Work your butt off. Be amazing. I mean, be so good that people can't question that you are good at your job. And then don't be mean. There is always, okay, not always, but there is almost always another tact that you can take than being mean. Because largely being mean is about someone more powerful harming someone who is less powerful. And there is almost never a justification for that. And if I can push that, if I can push that through society in a really simple way, I mean, I don't want to overstate my impact. I don't want to overstate my ability to do something. But I do have a vision, and I'm using every resource at my command to make that vision as large, as effective as possible. But be good, be amazing, don't be mean.
It's a simple message, but it's a message that it's got adult resonance to it too, frankly. That's not just for kids, and I suspect you know that. Let me ask you about the show Trash TV per se. Again, it will premiere on Valentine's Day, which is, of course, day after tomorrow, Wednesday, the 14th. How is it going to premiere?
Okay, so again, so your readers really understand where we're coming from. I can't drop names. But the reason I did this, because I didn't really want to do it as a shot in the dark, because it cost me a lot of money. Dropped somewhere around $25,000 to make this pilot happen. But I have a very, very, very well-connected, well-known partner in the kid entertainment business. His instruction to me was, look, we've got four projects in the pipeline right now. We just don't have any more money. And one of his projects in the pipeline now is an animated kid show of mine. And he said, we love this thing. We love Trash TV, but we don't have any money to do it. You need to do it. Bring to us exactly what we can sell. And I said, okay, then that is exactly what I'm going to do. So on Valentine's Day, it will be released on social media. It will be on YouTube, it will be on Facebook, and it'll be on Vimeo. And the thing that your listeners can do that will be the most helpful first would be simply go find it, Trash TV, Steve Trash. You can do a search. It'll show up at the top. Or you can come to SteveTrash.com, and there'll be a link on the front page. It's simply watch it and enjoy it. And if you like it, then share it, you know, with your fans and with your friends and your fans and your family, because sharing is caring. You know, I mean, it really is. If you like something and you think of something, if there needs to be more of something in the world, then we need to support that. So I would say starting Wednesday morning on Valentine, if your fans are into it, please watch. It's long. I made a 38-minute kids TV show because our goal is to make a series of 11-minute. And what my partner wants to say is, did you turn it off? Did you stop watching before 38 minutes was up? No, you didn't, because it's totally engaging. It's totally engrossing. Imagine what the guy can do with 11 minutes. And we want to make, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100 of the 11-minute things. But that's further down the road. We have to get a little social media heat beneath it so they can take it in and make something really happen with it.
Well, I think I think the Horn Family Community Congregation will probably happily participate in that. So it's. I mean, is there a stated time Wednesday morning when it goes hot?
Yeah, 1:30 a.m. It'll load at 1:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, Valentine's Day. And if they're YouTube folks, you know, I don't have an enormous viewership on YouTube because I don't really put things to YouTube very regularly. You know, I probably have 100 or 200,000 views, you know, total of all of my videos. And in the YouTube world, that's not a lot, really. But it will be on YouTube if that's your preferred medium. It will also be on Facebook if that's your preferred medium. I love Vimeo. Nobody watches Vimeo, but the quality is just so
incredible. The quality is dramatically better at Vimeo, without a doubt.
Was able to watch it on YouTube recently. We put a test up, and it looked fantastic even on YouTube. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with that.
You've got a lot to be happy about, Steve. And the team that you put together, are these the same folks that'll be working with you after it takes off?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the cool thing is part of the Entrepreneurial Center's goal is to put some action, put some support behind people that want to create amazing content. And so, you know, I've tracked down directors of photography and really world-class editors who just happen to live nearby. I mean, I live in Alabama, but I work mostly around the world. I mean, I just was performing in the United Arab Emirates, and I just literally got home from Los Angeles doing shows out there. That was 4 days ago. 2 days ago, I just came in from Tampa. I was playing the Straz Center there in Tampa. I headline the Straz Center, where they bus in these school kids to come see me talk about ecology and do amazing, you know, magic tricks. I mean, it's sort of, you know, I'm the most blessed person that I know, but I'm also greedy for making the world better. So every little notch that I move up, I try to grab even more, because I think that every gift that you've ever been given should be used for something in the world. I mean, you know, there shouldn't really be anything left when we're gone except, you know, the good energy that we pushed out. Nothing. Just, you know, be completely drained.
Right. You know? you slide into the hole in the ground screaming, "What a ride." Sure.
Exactly. I mean, that's the way to do it.
And the thing that struck me just watching these 38 minutes, and I was captivated, and I can guarantee you we'll find out if you start losing them at about 11 years old, because I've got an 11-year-old to try it on. But there's a 10-year-old and a 9-year-old too, and well, if I have to duct tape them to a chair, that's okay. But I don't think I will. I've been involved in grassroots activism up here in West Virginia, and we've talked some about what's done to this place up here. It's awful. I suspect that what you're doing, Steve, will eventually multiply itself to the point where, you're not necessarily joining a group to be a grassroots activist. You're just a grassroots activist in your own front yard or in your own backyard. And it can start with something as seemingly simple as reduce, reuse, recycle. And it expands from there into saying things like, well, I really would like to have clean water to drink. Hey, I'd like to breathe clean air. And once that light goes on, and there's a lot of people in this community for whom that light is on in a very, very big way. And because in grassroots kind of nonprofit sort of stuff, the question is always, and I've seen this myself, you have an action, and like you said, anger can carry you only so far, but you got a lot of people who are pretty thoroughly pissed off over something or another, and there's a lot to be that way about. But what you'll see is a bunch of people our age and older. And in a place like Appalachia that's, generally older to begin with, that might be different from what you see in, say, California or Florida or New York or Massachusetts. But it's always the question of one generation passing hard, hard-gotten wisdom to the next one without preaching at them. See here, Sonny, back in my day when we were riding our rocks to the protests,
in snow,
it uphill both ways, and having only mustard sandwiches for lunch. Yes, God, that was drilled into my head. But the problem becomes one of engaging the next generation, and if I understand you correctly, you've got a self-engaging process in the works here. Where, when this thing takes off and you start with those 11 minute segments going further, then, that's another opportunity every week. You mentioned 100 11-minute shorts. How does Steve Trash do that from one episode to the next? Because this is monumental. These are monumental efforts. These you're on the road a lot. How is this going to happen?
Well, that's a really good question. Just logistically, how does it happen? I have since I've been in show business for so long, I've shared the dressing rooms with some not famous and some famous people, and I had a friend who I was working in New York City maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and this friend was extremely famous. He had television specials, and he was in the magic world, but he was really, really, really clever, really cool, really amazing, and he ran out of material. And he was just stuck because it's really hard. Magic tricks are like a play. They have to be rehearsed over and over again. The blocking has to be done. And I'm lucky because I've spent 30 years with no one knowing who I am. So now I have this enormous catalog of tricks that are rehearsed, of magic that is practiced, magic that is ready to go. And truthfully, since I was a young man, I've always had my eye on the television thing, the making, magnifying the performance that you can do through media. And so all of these years, I've kept a catalog of all of the magic that I would do, all of the funny routines that I would create. So I have, right now, I have about 20 already blocked out. This is what we're going to do. This will be this episode. This is what we'll close with. Those are already mapped out. And I like living in Northwest Alabama. I live in an earth-burned house, you know, very insulated, have a 21-panel solar array in my front yard. I believe in walking the talk. You know, if a kid ever asks me about, say, clean, green solar power, I don't just want to tell him what I read in a book or some scientist told me. I kind of want to tell him what the good and the bad is from my perspective. And I could say, okay, here's the good. It absolutely works the way it's advertised. You can make a ton of power if it's a sunshiny day, but by 5 o'clock, you are not making any power anymore. So you got to have a good battery. Well, that becomes really obvious when that's how you power your house. Now, mind you, I'm still on Alabama Power, and there for a very specific reason. I wanted to be one of the customers feeding clean, green power back into the system, because it also had made Alabama Power have to come down and look and say, okay, well, how do we do this? What kind of meter do we put on? Because I'm not kidding. I believe I was like the fifth or the sixth person in the entire state of Alabama to push power back to Alabama Power, because they had to change my meter 4 or 5 times. So the first answer to your question is, because I've been an overnight sensation and it's taken me 30 years to get here, I have a very deep reservoir of material. And the second answer is, if you are an artist, or I would say even an activist, I'm not really an activist, I'm just an artist. I just see the world in a way that I think needs to be shared. And if people like it and grasp it and want to grab onto that, then that's their choice. You know, my activism is simply being the person that I would like others to be. That's my own personal activism. I just try to be that guy that'll look around and go, "You're being such a jerk." Well, just for me, the thing that I can control are my words, my actions, what I do. So my activism, just personally for me, is just simply trying to be that guy, the guy that I want the people around me. Instead of wagging my finger at them and telling them they need to be that, I'm just trying to be it. You know, it's pretty narrow band.
You know, it's amazing to hear you saying all that, Steve, because I think back to us, honest to God, we started changing classes in sixth grade. You know, up until fifth grade, yeah, it was all one classroom. But in sixth grade, we started changing classes. And one of the three or four teachers that year, the first day of school, she, in this, you know, this very old school teaching, I guess, because we're very old school people now. But she had this little poem on the blackboard. And the first couple of lines of it were, "I have to live with myself, and so I want to be fit for myself to know." Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me for 43 years. It makes a difference. And there were more couplets after that. But it's in many ways it's what you're talking about, and It's a valuable lesson to try to try to pass along. You mentioned your solar array, and I have to get nerdy with you for just a minute, if that's okay, because
okay.
I have a terrible case of solar panel lust. but you're on Alabama Power. You don't draw off the TVA system.
No, and Lord knows I wish I was on TVA, because they have a lot more incentives. And they pay you better for your power.
And I mean, I know where you're one county south of the Shoals, if I understand correctly.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I'm only maybe a dozen miles south, deep enough into Alabama Power. If I was 12 miles further north, I would be on Tennessee Valley Authority Power. But you know.
But if you were to go up in a hot air balloon from your place, you could probably see the stacks of the Colbert steam plant sitting there by the river. And of course, that's a coal fired power plant. And
I think they're closing it down, though.
Really? Or I thought, well, I don't, I was, as I said, that I was thinking maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they've converted it to gas.
I think it may be in the process of conversion or closing down, but I interrupt. But yes, The truth is, yes, I'm very close to the Culbertson steam plant.
And of course, I'm not sure. Does Alabama Power operate any nuclear facilities?
Yeah, I think they do, but I think those are over in Georgia.
Oh, okay, yeah, because it's all part of
it's the Southern
company. Right, right.
Yeah, yeah,
and so they distribute through your through the network, but you are. Does Alabama have a net metering law then? Do they
yes.
have to credit you with what you don't, what you feed back into the line?
They do. They do. They buy it at half of what I actually pay as a consumer of their power. Again, that's a choice for me. My choice was I wanted to be able to tell children about it. These are the good things. These are the bad things. I wanted to work through the system. You know, I am lucky to be a professional eco entertainer. I mean, I'm really, 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 really lucky. I work very hard, but I'm also really lucky. And I've had a couple of good years, and I took those good years and I installed these solar panels, not just with the goal of being energy independent, but of kind of making the system have to work around me. Alabama Power did have to learn some things about a remote location like me, and I had to learn some things about me feeding them back the power. I lose money, you know, feeding them that power, but sometimes if you have the money, saving the money, what you spend your money on says a lot about who you are. I mean, I don't really need, unless it's a Tesla, I don't really need a really big, nice car. So why not go buy a solar array? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that just makes more sense to me.
No, I'd walk out. I saw the video, you know, with you with your little broom and sweeping off the panels and everything. And I'm like, I want to be that guy because it can't help. It can't help but feel good. And any opportunity where you just get a chance to unreservedly feel good is a good thing. I mean, it's been, well, you know, you talk about dreams for years, and one of the goals, and we will get there someday, somehow. One of the goals here is that I want the opening to this program sometime to say that no mountains were blown up in the making of this program. I'd like for this to be mm-hmm. the first progressive radio network to be powered entirely by the sun. And again, there's some cost involved, but then again, there's that complicated idea of externalization, Steve.
Right.
And you know, the reason you're losing money is because the costs of the coal-fired electricity, for instance, is externalized onto human populations. And that's
exactly right.
And that's why we get so cranky up here, mm-hmm. because you know.
Well, you can do exactly what you said, Bob. I believe someday, in my heart of hearts, I believe this is true. And you don't have to be a barefoot, granola eating hippy dippy type.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, right? Yeah.
No, I married one, so you know those are the people that I love. But my point is, the way we get there is that we step back and we look at the way natural systems work. And I've looked really deeply at this, and here is the way nature works. Nature works in cyclic systems, right? It works sustainably. Look at the way nature works with the air cycle, with the oxygen cycle. Look at the way nature works with the water cycle, constantly recycled. So that is a principle of nature. It must be renewable. That's one principle. Can it be renewed? If it can be renewed in its own short pattern of time, yes, that's a system that nature uses. And the second is, nature doesn't create pollution. Waste in nature is food. Right. So what we have to do, and this is civilization as a whole. I mean, it's a really great thing that we discovered coal and other fossil fuels. It is a really great thing because we wouldn't have computers if it weren't for that. But it is now time to pivot, and we pivot towards renewable, and non-polluting technologies. And we don't do that because we're nice people, and we don't do that because we're hippies. We do that because those are the rules. If you want to play baseball, you don't bring a football or a hockey mask to the game. You play the game of baseball, and we're playing the game of Earth. And the game of Earth, one of the rules is it has to be renewable. And one of the other rules is it has to not make pollution. Just look into the natural world. And those are two very systemic rules. You want to win baseball, you play baseball rules. You want to win the Earth game, you play sustainability rules. Is it renewable? And you can apply that to energy. And that's why I totally believe it is possible for the Horn Network to be a green, clean entity that is making no pollution and is getting its power in some sustainable fashion. I'm sure that your listeners know this, but every hour, if you could possibly collect all of the sunlight that lands on the surface of the planet. Now, it's a pretty big planet, but every hour, all of the sunlight that lands on the surface is equal to the amount of all human enterprise for an entire year. It's exactly equal. So there is an enormous, enormous amount of solar energy that is falling to the planet. And in a way, all energy is solar, even coal. That's stored energy that was left there by the plants and the dinosaurs, and that energy originated with the sun. So in a way, that's solar power. It's a very polluting resource. So you want to get rid of the polluting resource and use the renewable, non-polluting.
Exactly. Do you have any plans for wind there on your vast estate at Frog Pond?
Yeah, Alabama's not good on the wind thing. I'm waiting for better technology to come down the pike, where I've seen some people, instead of having large turbines, they use much smaller, almost like a mast, you know?
Yeah.
A mast is really good because it has a lot of surface area, but it's smaller turbines, and I think I've seen some work on that. In my opinion, because I'm not really an engineer, I'm not a scientist, I'm really just an entertainer, and I just have a passion for the environment, I think what we do is we tell the young, smart STEAM kids, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math, we tell them, guys, ladies, this is the goal. This is the goal. Y'all go figure out how to do this. And if you give them the goal, then they go, they just go figure it out. They find out what the sustainable option is to house 8 billion people.
And they love a puzzle.
Well, all good scientists and engineers love a puzzle, but you need to tell them which puzzle to try to solve.
Right, and I would far rather see people working on that puzzle or... you know, one of the real hobgoblins in the sustainability world is, of course, storage. You know, working on the battery technology, but I'd love to see work like that taking place, as opposed to, say, figuring out a way to dissolve more people more rapidly into mist with something that blows up. Because that's not problem. That's solving the problem the wrong way. But Steve, yeah. You have been very generous with an entire hour of your life this evening. I remember a million years ago when you told a lovely young lady in a Wendy's somewhere in South Alabama, Auburn, I think it was. You just looked at her and said, "Have a nice life," and she looked at you like you had just landed from another place. So. I know what your time means to you, and as a consequence, I want to thank you profusely. And I want to if folks sign up at stevetrash.com, you know, you're not going to you won't send them any emails telling them that you're a Nigerian prince or anything. But
no, as a matter of fact, if you have teachers that are listeners each month, if you sign up at stevetrash.com, because I don't send a lot of these newsletters, there are prizes. for teachers, you know, classroom supplies, or maybe 1 month I may, you may win eco flyers for every kid in your classroom. And eco flyers are made of 100% post-consumer recycled plastic. So if you sign up, you have access to things that I make. And each month you'll have access to possibly win one of those pretty cool prizes.
That sounds cool indeed. So, and that's also a way for you to though reach out when these 11-minute episodes start taking off. People can find out that way too, right?
Yeah, and I don't really send a lot of those, but I would just ping people and say, the newest episode is up. Please go check it out. I'm not a big fan. I like social media, but I do not trust social media. So knowing, you know, a person's email address or having their connecting information always makes me a lot happier, because I sometimes feel that the information that I'm putting out there is being controlled by someone else. It's not really reaching the people that I want it to reach. And I have a really positive message for our children, and I need help getting that message out.
Absolutely. And I hope members of the Horn Family Community Congregation will assist you in that regard. As you know, Steve, I always wish you the very best. I have so much admiration for what you're doing. And frankly, you give me through what you do a heck of a lot of hope. And for that reason, I'm waiting for this thing to take off on Wednesday, like Elon Musk's next rocket. So, that being the case, well, you know, I'll be watching, and I'm sorry,
I want to interrupt you, because I know that your listeners are very activist oriented, and I would just, with my little show and with giving me an hour of yours, I just want to remind everybody, just never forget that real love exists. I mean, it really exists, and it's out there saying thank you or please or smiling at a stranger. And there's no greater love than making a child laugh his or her little butt off, right? And that's what I'm interested in doing, is just sort of being like a little joy factory. And I appreciate you helping me get the word out on that.
Oh, absolutely. And just in case anybody out there is wondering, are you back on the road anytime soon?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I leave for, God knows where. It's New York, I think, next week or something. But, yeah, I hit the road in 4 or 5 days.
Well, then I'll probably see that, and I'll make mention to people that where they can find you.
Oh yeah, please do. Yeah, we're always playing locations all over the place. I know I'll be in New York City sometime in March or April. I'm headed out to Texas, so all over your listening range, I will be. I heard you thanking some folks in Oregon. I only make it out there usually once or twice a year, not quite as often because I'm, you know, East Coast based.
Right, and I know the Wisconsin State Fair. The Ohio State Fair. I've seen news clips of you from there. I'm actually headed to New York City midweek this week. It's a shame it didn't quite work out. It would have been fun. But
yeah,
Steve,
enjoy yourself. Great town.
Oh, what a place! I can't wait. Heck, I'm just thinking about Katz's Deli a little bit. You know and there's matzo balls the size of grapefruits. You know, my God. But Steve, have a wonderful evening. Thank you again, and best of luck. And we'll do what we can to try to help you make this thing take off and go.
You guys, all of your fans and listeners, keep the faith.
All right, thanks, Steve. Take care.
See you, man. Talk to you soon.
Bye now. The one and only Steve Trash, stevetrash.com, and Trash TV, a brand new. A brand new effort to reach young people and teach them about the potential that they have in their world to make it a better place. Well, it all launches Wednesday morning at 1:30 a.m. Watch the whole thing. Got grandkids of the right age? Watch it with them. If you can't watch it with them, tell mommy and daddy to watch it with them. Because in a media landscape such as what we have, I can guarantee you, having had special celebrity access, this is better than most children's programming you're going to find, period. And it all starts on Wednesday. And it comes from a very good place, both spiritually and, geographically. So we'll take a break now, 10 minutes past the hour, and come back with, as the old joke goes, coffee break's over, back on your heads. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Said if I can't feel it, then how could it be? No magic could happen to me. And then I saw you, I couldn't believe.
Yeah, it seemed appropriate. I was actually going to play a track from Steve's The Green album, but I forgot that it was on the old computer that we don't use anymore. Well, after the program, I'll load The Green album into the Fab Machine here. You always forget something when you're setting up a new computer, and I had no idea it would be that it would be that. It's about 15 past the hour, and again, this evening, with a shortened broadcast week today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, this evening, we've got a fundraising goal of $285, and thanks to Ralphs for getting it going. Thank you so very much. Hopefully, we can take down the rest of it, and you know, I can take care of everything that has to be taken care of. You know, when I leave here, there's a lot of stuff that has to be gotten, you know, everything's got to be current, all the bills got to be paid. But, you know, groceries and gasoline and all of that go into it, too. And so, again, try to raise $285 this evening so as not to have some terrifying fundraising goal trying to get out the door. And then when I get back, well, basically, with the exception of the 22nd, fundraising will be over for the month of February, if we keep on track, So, you know, we'll cross our fingers, I guess. Let's see. It's Moran Monday, isn't it? Yes, it is, as a matter of fact, and lucky for us, we have Morans. Lots and lots of them, but of course, there are things that that we take care of here at the beginning of the program that I that we do at the beginning of the program that I didn't do at the beginning of the program because I wanted to jump right to the conversation with Steve. One of which is, of course, well, this day in horn history, or rather, this day in horn history. Brought to you by Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Have you tried Miserable May Apple? Well, if you haven't, you're missing, you're making yourself miserable needlessly. Miserable May Apple from Horn Nutraceuticals is a proprietary blend of May Apple that we have cut and freeze-dried and stepped on and done God only knows what to provide you with the best May Apple experience. Absolutely. No salesman will call, and there's no middleman, so we don't cut out any price decreases to you. That's right. If you'll act now and order your 90-day supply of Miserable May Apple from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, we'll send you also a little bundle of confirmation strips so that you can uncork one. There's no cork, really, but you can take apart one of the little capsules and look at the pencil shavings that we've put in there. There's no real May Apple involved because it's a bullshit nutritional supplement that has absolutely no value whatsoever. But you can find out in the privacy of your own home for only $123.72 that, in fact, you've bought a whole lot of nothing, plus shipping and handling, of course. Miserable May Apple. Well, it's non-GMO. It's vegan. It's gluten-free, free-range, cruelty-free, and meets all of your May Apple needs for your every day's good health. Because, of course, we can't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding professional radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to try to foist off on the little right-wing lurkers who linger at the far fringes and corners of the program. Miserable May Apple from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Try it today. You'll be glad you didn't. Operators aren't standing by. This isn't a free call. Miserable May Apple. Use no hooks. Post no bills. This side up. FOB. COD. USB. FSB. BBB. In good health with Miserable May Apple. So for today's edition of This Day in Horn History, well, we're climbing aboard the DeLorean and speeding off 8 years into the past, all the way back to February the 12th, 2010. It's Friday on the front porch as Bob opens the program, broadcasting from a studio that's approaching freezing indoor temperatures. Of note is the fact that back then there was no Horn Friday on the front porch extraordinary ordinary roundtable. First up is extraordinary ordinary garden variety Republican and U.S. Senate candidate from Arkansas, Curtis Coleman, who's been interviewed by the smartest host in liberal talk radio earlier that day. Embryonic stem cell research is taking the concept of taking a life and using it to conduct experiments so we can temporarily extend somebody else's life. Let me tell you what I just described. I just described what the Nazis did to the Jews in the death camps of World War II. Coleman says, I'm going to give you this opportunity to retract your statement comparing embryonic stem cell research to Nazi-run extermination camps, Curtis, says the smartest liberal talk host. Curtis Coleman, being a proper embryo fetishist Republican, takes this opportunity to dig in and double down on his vacuous statement. This, of course, has Bob reaching for the tennis ball and duct tape, which, by the way, was standard fare back in Horn antiquity. There was none of this fancy-grade hockey puck or imported camo duct tape business. Also absent from Horn antiquity were the Gulfstream V, the Maybach, the indoor saltwater pool, and the Cabana Boy. Next up, there's a sensationalist piece of journalism run by Nashville's Channel 5 Action News crack journalism team exposing America's homegrown moose limb terrorist threat. The piece consists of Nashville's Channel 5 head crack investigative journalist Nick Beres flying around in the Channel 5 Action News Sky Tracker helicopter exposing alleged Islamic terrorist compounds in northeastern Tennessee. Bob's play-by-play of Channel 5's piece includes an imaginary flight between his imaginary right-wing husband and wife team, Emery and Marvelline, whereby Emery calls Marvelline by another woman's name, Marlene, causing her to suspect marital infidelity on Emery's part. If you're a frequent listener to Bob's program, you'll have heard him say from time to time, "You do not want to be living inside my head. You don't want to know what goes on in there." In a moment orchestrated solely by the goddess of irony, as Bob works through his play-by-play of the Channel 5 Action News crack journalism expose of homegrown terrorism, news breaks that a mass shooting has taken place at the campus of the University of Alabama, Huntsville. As dictated by the goddess of irony, the perpetrator of the mass shooting turns out to be a good, God-fearing, upstanding, family values Christian, mother of four, Amy Bishop Anderson, who's decided to unleash freedom at the UA Huntsville Biology Department. Amy Bishop Anderson doesn't exactly strike me as a Muslim name, remarks Bob. The perpetrator turns out to be a repeat Christian freedom protector whose previous crimes include shooting and killing her own brother, as well as sending a letter bomb to a government official. As one might imagine, the crack journalism team at Channel 5 Action News never mentioned anything about America's Christian homegrown terrorism problem. And that was a look into the ghost of Horn Past, 417 weeks into antiquity for This Day in Horn History. You know, it's funny, I read these things and I think, yeah, I do. I remember that. I remember that very well. Sheesh. And by the way, a footnote in that particular episode, a reference to denialists like Hannity and Flimball, the term climate Scientologist was coined by Granite Bryan from New Hampshire at an hour and 18 minutes and 24 seconds into the program. A climate, I think we're going to have to revive that. Climate Scientologist, yes. But like I said, it's Moran Monday, and we've got oodles and oodles, oh morans, to report on, to laugh at. You know that over the weekend, the same guy who said that, who gave us the concept of very fine Nazis and very fine Klansmen, you know that... Friday evening on the Malloy program, he was very disturbed to find out that there were, that Rob Porter was upset and managed to rattle on and then tweet about it some more the next day without ever mentioning, you know, the women who got beaten. They don't get so much sympathy. So it stands to reason that by the time the news cycle rolled around to today, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags would manage to figure out a way. You know she's going to put her foot in her mouth. The real adventure is figuring out how she's going to get the other one in there with it.
Does the president still wish Rob Porter well? Does he still believe that he wants him to have a great career ahead of him? Because that would seem...
I think the president of the United States hopes that all Americans can be successful in whatever they do. And if they've had any issues in the past, I'm not confirming or denying one way or the other, but if they do, the president wants success for all Americans, and that he was elected to serve all Americans, and he hopes for the best for all American citizens across the country.
Even Jim. The ones who beat their wives. Yes. Just so we're clear on that. He wishes great success for all Americans, the Carotene Caligula does, including the Americans who give their wives black eyes. Or run over their hands with the car. Or, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. There's something about this particular story. Or maybe it's just that there's something about white wingers. That makes issues regarding spousal violence, domestic violence, it's a problem for them. And so it was that on Sunday, Rand Paul, who had the livin' be Jesus apparently beaten out of him, showed up on Face the Nation and was asked his opinion about the Rob Porter domestic violence controversy and the other domestic violence guy controversy at the White House. At which point, yes, the two-foot-in-mouth thing, it's a trick that not only Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags does. Rand Paul, who recently got the stuffing beaten out of him, get the hockey puck.
We don't.
Sure, but setting aside the ins and outs, the president said on Twitter, due process, lives are being ruined. The vice president said, no tolerance. Can you reconcile those two? And if someone in Kentucky asked you, Senator, what's their position on this? Could you change it to them?
You know, it's difficult for me to get involved in theirs other than to say that absolutely no place for domestic violence in our world. And then beyond that...
See, that's where a smart senator ends his statement. There's no place for that in our world. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, however, can't do that. Oh no, not him.
Called for me to get involved in theirs other than to say that absolutely no place for domestic violence in our world. And then beyond that, I will say that there is complicated things, and somebody has to. I mean, if you've ever been to family court with he said and she said, and I'm not saying that I'm denying what these women are saying, I'm just saying that these things are very, very complicated. If you go to family court and you're a family court judge, you talk about a very, very difficult job.
So now we're evincing sympathy for family court judges? And, you know, from time to time around here, because of something I once heard the Savage Wiener say, I'll throw out the occasional, not saying, just saying. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, literally did that.
Beyond that, I will say that there is complicated things, and somebody has to. I mean, if you've ever been to family court with he said and she said, and I'm not saying that I'm denying what these women are saying, I'm just saying that these things are very, very complicated. If you
I'm not saying that I don't believe the women. I'm just saying they're complicated. Which is kind of a way of saying you don't believe the woman with the black eye, no matter whether or not you're saying you do or did you. It's complicated. It's what it is. But by God, it's complicated. I wonder when, because the guy's been charged now, the guy that beat the stuffing out of Rand Paul. I wonder if when they get to the trial, if there's a trial, I wonder if the guy, I wonder if Rand Paul will be okay if the prosecuting attorney argues to the court that he's not saying that Rand Paul didn't get the stuffing beaten out of him, but that, well, it's complicated as to why Rand Paul got the stuffing beaten out of him. I mean, how many times can a guy mow over your prized begonias before you have to go over and speak up for the begonias? It's complicated, you see. No, see, it's not complicated at all, because Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, didn't deserve to have the stuffing beaten out of him. If he deserved it, well, he didn't deserve it. Or as Clint Eastwood says in The Unforgiven, deserving's got nothing to do with it. And in the case of domestic violence, that really is the case. There's no such thing as a woman deserving to be beaten or hit or in any way harmed by her spouse, male or female. In the grand scheme of things, you know, we can kind of go back to one of the, you know, that's not being amazing. That's being mean. Hitting your spouse or running over her hand with your car. Well, that's true. James pointing out, come on, Bob. Trump says they never were beaten, so why would he mention them? And, you know, you have to listen to him. And then there's, and because we've mentioned him in the past, then there's nasty old hypocritically religious Orrin Hatch. He could have kept his mouth shut. But Rob Porter did yeoman work for Orrin Hatch beginning in like 2014. And maybe in some ways single-handedly responsible for getting Trump to order the destruction of two magnificent areas of natural wilderness in Utah, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments. He could have just not said anything, but cranky old Orrin, nope, sorry. Now, remember, with regard to Jennifer Willoughby, ex-wife to Rob Porter, Ms. Willoughby said, he pulled me naked and dripping from the shower to yell at me. That was one instance. Then there's the black eye that she said she got from Rob Porter punching her. Colby Holderness, who was first married to Rob Porter the first time, she was the first person who said, I do. And she said that, yeah, he was verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive, and that's why I left. How did Family Values Republican Orrin Hatch respond to that, you ask? Well, I'll be happy to tell you. Here's what he said.
It's incredibly discouraging to see such a vile attack on such a decent man. Shame on any publication that would print this, and shame on the politically motivated, morally bankrupt character assassins that would attempt to sully a man's good name.
Wow. Kind of makes you want to call for a status check on Mrs. Hatch, doesn't it? But then again, this is Orrin Hatch we're talking about. This is the man who, rather than be shocked and appalled at perverse tales of sexual harassment by a Supreme Court nominee, chose to mount a slimy, full-on offensive against the woman who reported the harassment. I'm talking, of course, about Anita Hill. This is the same Orrin Hatch who said that Trump is greater than Washington or Lincoln. Maybe the greatest presidency we've seen not only in generations, but maybe ever. No, really. And I can only presume because he's so pious that he wasn't even drunk when he said that. It's incredibly discouraging to see such a vile attack on such a decent man. Sort of leaves you wondering what the running definition of decency is, doesn't it? Such a decent man. Bill in Allentown writing, hey, Bob, subject line, Orrin Hatch. I never thought I'd live during the time where the family values people would get worse than Strom Thurmond. Oh, Strom Thurmond. Yeah, I mean, he raped the upstairs maid and everything. But that was a different Tom. But I knew that we were in for a good... Yeah, this is the family values crowd. This is the same crowd that was horrified and disgusted, I tell you, disgusted by a consensual sex act back in the 90s. But now that their president's a two-time loser, thrice married, philanderer with 5 kids and 3 baby mamas, well, you know, I mean, you know, who hires hookers and pays them $130,000 a year, and when he's hauling his sweaty carcass off of her, says, "You were great. You reminded me of my daughter Ivanka." I'm never going to be over that. I'm just never going to be over that. Oh, God, I'm never going to be over that. So that, you know, that's where the family values went. Which, in a way, is kind of interesting. Because, you know, years ago I said, people like me, I can't help fix Christianity. Only Christianity can fix Christianity. Just like we can't fix Islam. Only Muslims can fix Islam. Well, enter an evangelical by the name of Dana Hall McCain. writing in and published in at AL.com. She wrote, "When we believe that government, rather than our own submission to Christ and evangelism, is the whole ballgame, or even the most important facet of it, we become vulnerable to all sorts of compromises needed to win and maintain power. Truth is no longer what we pursue at all costs. Power is, because we believe we can't live without it." And then she lowered the boom. "We've lost the guts needed to take our own people to the woodshed because we've believed that our primary job is to beat Democrats instead of the devil. The devil is delighted by this misunderstanding." Oh, I don't think she's going to be on the Republican, on the GOP Christmas card list anymore, Dana Hall McCain. Because in essence, what her letter does is call out the Christians, like the, you know, 63% of Republican white women and the 72% of Republican white men in Alabama who voted for a pedophile. And from time to time, people say, "Well, yeah, it's Alabama." Nah. 48% or so of white women in America still support him. After the Access Hollywood tape, knowing he's a philandering two-time loser, three-time married, with five kids by three baby mamas, knowing that he hired a porn star slash hooker and paid her $130,000, knowing all this, they still support him, and they still call themselves Christians. Morons. Yeah, I know. Brother Deacon Asa, going back to Rand Paul, says, "Anyone else perplexed by the fact that Rand Paul cuts his own lawn, or am I alone out here?" No, you're not, because, I mean, just the mental image of little Randy Paul and that thing on his head out there sweating away in the Kentucky sun, shoving the snapper or the— nah, he's probably got probably got something real highfalutin. Maybe he's got one of those Cub Cadet push mowers with four-wheel drive and the elevated 360-degree turning front wheels. Yeah. I admit, though, it's an image that's hard to square up with. Well, but then again, you know, he's a libertarian, and they believe in picking themselves up by somebody else's bootstraps. That's the thing about weekends. That's why we have Moran Monday on Monday. Because, well, then again, there's another former Trump official. In this case, Timothy Nolan. Timothy Nolan was a judge in Kentucky Stan, and during the 2016 presidential campaign, he was Trump's Kentucky campaign manager. Apparently, this story hasn't reached Trump yet because he hasn't tweeted about what a great guy Timothy Nolan is and how he hopes he'll have a wonderful future. Tim Nolan's off to prison. He was a well-known judge in Kentucky. And like I said, he was the Kentucky campaign chairman, campaign manager for Trump. Trump Pence. Right? But he's headed off to he's headed off to the slammer in Kentucky, and it looks like he will be in the care, custody, and control of the Commonwealth of Kentucky's Department of Corrections through about, again with the ciphering, 2038. Yeah, 2038. 20 years. That's because a week ago, or last week, he entered a guilty plea to 21 counts, wait for it, of child sex trafficking. Yes. Went back all the way to 2004. So when you're asking yourself, gee, why didn't they vet this guy, Rob Porter, who had a habit of beating on his wife? Well, the answer is because they didn't vet anybody. They didn't vet the they didn't vet the Kentucky campaign chairman with a history of child sex trafficking going back to 2004. Here's how it would work. When he was a judge, Timothy Nolan would use drugs and threats of arrest or eviction to coerce underage girls into doing sex acts. In some cases, Nolan would trade pain pills in exchange for sex. One girl actually lived on his own on property that he owned, and he'd threatened to throw her out in the street if she didn't perform sex acts on him. Counts. He's also paying a fine of $110,000, and that will largely go into the Human Trafficking Victims Fund that was established back in 2013. He's the second state campaign manager to head up the river. You might recall Oklahoma Trump campaign chair Ralph, no, I'm not kidding, his real last name is Shorty, who pled guilty to child sex trafficking for paying an underage boy to have sex with him in the Super 8 there in some godforsaken hole town in Oklahoma. Both of these, of course, were family values. Republicans. Oh, yes. But that's not all. Oh, no. That's not all. You know, I mentioned Orrin Hatch out there in Utah a little bit ago. Well, let's talk about Utah legislature member, Representative Joe Stannard. He's 43 years old. He comes from St. George, Utah. And, of course, he's got tremendous God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing at other books, too, and whatever. Family values. In his career as a member of the legislature of the state of Utah, he has, for instance, he's voted to increase punishment for people who were caught soliciting sex. I did this, like I said, because he's got good Christian-ish family values, because he's married and he's got three children. Over on his campaign website, which has since been deleted, it says, "The most important thing in John's life is his family. He enjoys being able to spend time with his wife and three children every chance he can get." That's why he was busted for using taxpayer funds. I'm not laughing, I'm really not. That's why he was busted for using taxpayer funds to pay $250 twice to a sex worker by the name of Bree Taylor. Greg Hartley's the chief of staff for the Utah House of Representatives, and he said, "Yeah, we do have hotel receipts. I do think we will be asking him to reimburse for the two nights hotel that were reported that are in question." And Taylor was kind of surprised that this family values Republican, John Stannard, used his state-provided telephone to set up the meetings with the sex worker. "I was surprised he was using his real phone number," Bree Taylor went on to say. "Thought that was kind of stupid, but I knew he wasn't a psycho, so I met with him. I told him I'd Googled him, and we talked about what he does. He said he comes up to Salt Lake a lot, and he'd like to see me again. He said he never does this sort of stuff in St. George because it's really culturally strict down there," which is another way of saying it's where my wife and I and our children have a home. So, no. Good God-fearing, upstanding Bible-believing, State Representative John Stannard from St. George, Utah. I wonder if you dug enough, would you find him blathering on and on and on about, say, the sanctity of marriage? It's almost guaranteed, isn't it? So he's resigned. He's not headed off to prison or anything, because they're very forgiving in Utah, and they'll just ask him to they'll just ask him to reimburse the $500 that he used to pay the sex worker. Interesting place, Utah. You know, I think if we... Well, never mind. A very interesting place. There's a little town called Hilldale, Utah. It's right smack dab in the middle of the area that is largely controlled by the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You know, the weird Mormons. These are the ones who still think that, I've got two wives and it's mighty bigamy, that kind of thing. They think Jesus and his brother Satan out there on the planet Kolob want men to be married to several women at a time. And they also think that Jesus and God and Jesus' brother Satan out there on the planet Kolob want women to become brides when they're, children. Child marriages, the fundamental. This is that cult that's led by a guy named Warren Jeffs. He's doing time now, namely life, having been convicted of sexual assault back in 2011, but gosh, that doesn't change the validity or the sacredness of his mission. And so the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints pretty much runs Hilldale, Utah. Or did. Because, you see, they've just done something they have never done before in Hilldale, Utah. They elected a woman, a daughter of Eve, to be the mayor of Hilldale, Utah. She won the election and everything. And when she did, get this, 11 employees of the city of Hilldale quit their jobs. By the way, the woman, Dania or Danya Jessup, who was elected as mayor, well, she's not a member of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and she doesn't wear pioneer dresses, and she wasn't married off at the tender age of 3 1/2, and she doesn't have one husband and several other sister wives. And consequently, 11 city employees done up and quit. Of those 11 employees, one of them actually gave a reason, according to KSL.com. That employee said that because of his closely held religious beliefs, he had to quit because he could not follow a woman or serve on a board with apostates. Now, remember, the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they got drummed out of the main line, if you can call it that, you know, the Romney wing, the Orrin Hatch wing of the Mormon Church. Man, when you're too weird for the Mormons, when your dogma is too bizarre, but it's not really, what it is that fundamentalist wing is actually following the stuff that Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and that bunch taught. But Mayor Jessup is not a fundamentalist. Maybe she's just a regular Mormon. Or, gasp, maybe she's not any kind of Mormon at all. She's an apostate. I didn't even know women had apostates. Thought that was a guy thing. Oh, well. That's about as much time as I want to spend in Utah. How about you? Well, no, that's not true. I'd like to see Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante before they blow it all to hell. But you get my meaning. Yeah, what else on this Moran Monday, now that we've gone 2 hours of the program? Oh, I think there's some fun to be had with Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. He offers real possibilities. Anglo-American. No, he pulled that. And maybe we'll get into it. Or we can get into some phone conversations. If you would like to participate in the program, well, it's easy enough. Just No, use the phone, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And if you need us to pay the freight, well, we've got a toll-free line for you, 844-843-4676. Ooh, that was fast, Bob. 844-843-4676. It's easy to remember because it's 844 the horn. 844 the horn. That gets you through, so that's all easy. If you want to email bobkincaid@gmail.com, that's cool too. We've got lots more to talk about if you'd like. We can go to the Philippines to check in with what's going on with the Nectarine Nero's dear friend, President Duterte. All kinds of possibilities. But we'll take a break for the moment, and wow, we've still got $285 to raise this evening. That $5 makes it kind of odd, so I can't say 10 at 28 or 28 at 10. Well, yeah, I can say that. We'll just forego the 5. That's cheating in the world of ciphering, but that's what we'll do. But we got $285 to raise, or 280 is close enough. And, well, we're only 2 days away. From mid-month. James with a note, OMFG. Bob, do you reckon it was the sister wives what voted her in? I drove through South Central Utah many years ago with my shiny new car and long hair and beard. Beautiful country, but the people were extremely close-mouthed. Probably close-minded, too, when you get right down to it, James. Apparently, it brought some Utah memories to the surface. Scott and Punky with a note says, in the late 1990s, I took temporary leave of my senses and visited Utah to meet an online pen pal I was in touch with then. It was completely on a whim. She turned out to be somewhat crazy, and after I had returned home from that visit, she later assumed a different AOL name and began to engage in stalking. My only positive memory of my Utah trek was in the form of a small hardbound book of the play A Thousand Clowns. I'd been a great fan of the 1965 film of the play since my teens, so it was delightful to buy it in play form. By the way, that film is in my all-time top 5 favorite movies, and it'll be on TCM later this month, February 20th. For those who've never seen it, be sure to watch or DVR it for later viewing. It'll delight you and brighten up your otherwise drab and wretched life. Drab and wretched life. That, by God, is what you call a recommendation there. So, let's take a break and see what transpires. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. long-distance dedication going out to philandering husbands all over Utah. And all over the United States, too. That's the WHO and my wife. Huh. Okay. So, the Olympics are on. It's almost impossible not to at least see a clip here and there. But, really? The problem with having so much stuff to cover is that there is going to almost, it's going to be almost unavoidable that you're going to run across some morons and some stupid. For instance, ABC affiliate, an ABC affiliate in the Chicago area, reporting on the 2018 Winter Games in Pyeongchang, South Korea. No, really. It's a visual joke, but it's still funny. With the banner, Show of Unity, talking about the fact that there's a combined North-South Korean team, like the women's hockey team is North and South Koreans, that kind of thing. They had at WLS Channel 7 in Chicago what they're describing as a graphics mix-up, which is not quite as horrifying, say, as a wardrobe malfunction. A graphics mix-up. Reporting, reporting on the Unity team, whatever. The graphics department put up a it looks like it's over the shoulder of the anchor. And it, I kid you not, it says P.F. Chang 2018. No, really. P.F. Chang 2018. That's not even Korean food. WLS Channel 7 blamed it. It was a graphics mix-up. P.F. Chang's, the chain, then heard about it and immediately tweeted, contrary to this broadcast, we're not hosting the games. P.F. Chang's 2018. You can't buy that kind of PR. But then there's Katie Couric, who was called on to assist in the coverage. And they, she offered commentary on speed skating. And this was during the Parade of Nations, or whatever they call it, when the team from the Netherlands appeared. Katie Couric explained to her American audience, who frankly probably don't know the Netherlands from Namibia, because we're not good with geography that way, and we've got a president who probably thinks the Netherlands is Zambia. Mm-hmm. As the Dutch team entered the stadium, Katie Couric mused, why are they so good? You may be asking yourselves. Because, she answered her own question, because skating is an important mode of transportation in a city like Amsterdam. Amsterdam has lots of canals that can freeze in winter, so for as long as the canals have existed, the Dutch have skated on them to get from place to place, to race each other, and to have fun. The Dutch were not particularly amused. One Twitter user, Dirk Jan Moet, M-O-E-D-T, posted a photo of a crowd of speed skaters racing around a track by a windmill and captioned it, "Rush hour in the Netherlands." There was much fun had by all. You know how it is. You just, you know, you live in Amsterdam and you get up in the morning and the lawyers and the judges and the doctors all strap on their skates and go skating down the canals to their daily endeavors. No, really. And then there was the semi-international incident that took place. This analyst has already been fired by NBC. Joshua Cooper Ramo has been sacked unceremoniously for his opening ceremony's remarks. And according to NBC today, will have no further role on the air during the Pyeongchang Games. As the, and this is astonishing. As the teams paraded past, Joshua Cooper Ramo said, and if you know your, again, if you know your history, and this community does, you might want to bite down extra hard on the hockey puck. Every Korean will tell you that Japan is a cultural, technological, and economic example that has been so important to their own transformation. At this point in time, every person of Korean origin probably had a hissy. Because for centuries, Japan has tried to dominate and, if not outright murder, the people who happen to live on the Korean Peninsula. You know, given our short historical memories, we think of there being two Koreas. You know, it's one little peninsula, and it's two countries, and we fought a war there that we don't talk about much. And, but no, it was one peninsula, one essentially, you know, country, nation, kingdom, what have you. And Japan, or, you know, warring factions, that kind of, but Japan, going back, you know, into its own feudal past, has from time to time invaded Korea. And they did it again about, oh, you know. Let's see, you know, 75, 78 years ago, 80 years ago. Along with their expansion into Manchuria, the general fascist attempt at Asian domination that they put on under the... Right. Yeah. So every Korean does not look up to Japan as an inspiration for South Korea's economic success. This particular incident was enough of a stinker that it made it all the way to the pages of the Washington Post. A petition made the rounds. Thousands of people signed it. It contained language stating, any reasonable person familiar with the history of Japanese imperialism and the atrocities it committed before and during World War II would find such statement deeply hurtful and outrageous. And no, no South Korean would attribute the rapid growth and transformation of its economy, technology, and political cultural development to Japanese imperialism. There is, for instance, the still sore issue of possibly hundreds of thousands of Korean women being kidnapped and forced into sexual servitude as comfort women for the Japanese military. Back in the 1990s, Japan even set up a fund to help the former comfort women sex slaves. But there was an Easter egg buried in this story. You might remember, you might recall that last week we had reason to mention Henry the K, Hank Kissinger, bosom buddy of Richard Nixon, criminal. Henry Kissinger, with the blood of countless millions upon his hands from Southeast Asia, let alone the vile atrocities that were committed at his behest and that of, in Chile. Well, the guy who said the thing that pissed off Korea, Joshua Cooper Ramo, well, he's the co-CEO of Kissinger's consulting firm. He also sits on the board of Starbucks and FedEx. And he said that. He really, really, no kidding, honest to goodness, said that. Every Korean will tell you that Japan is a cultural, technological, and economic example that has been so important to their own transformation. How do you get to where you're... One, why does sitting on the board of FedEx and Starbucks and being co-CEO of Henry Kissinger's consulting firm get you a slot commenting on the opening ceremonies of the Olympics? One, that's question one. Two, how oblivious to history must you be to make a statement like that? I mean, I'm just a little hillbilly sitting smack dab in the middle of Appalachistan. And I can tell you with 100% certainty that I would never suggest that the Koreans owe a debt of gratitude to the Japanese. You know what? Even if I thought it was true, I wouldn't say it. Because those are some ancient hatreds we're talking about there. Hatreds that have been passed down through the generations. You know, one day we'll get a chance. And it's one of those things, and if you watch the politics of it, it's very interesting. These overtures from the North have been designed to put the South a little bit more at ease. I don't know if you saw coverage of the North Korean women's cheerleading squad, which was by far the largest single contingent of anybody in the North sent down to the games. You know, they're not officially there. They're not allowed to speak to each other. They're not allowed to speak to outsiders. They can't answer questions about life in North Korea. But they sit there in the stands. For instance, they did this at the game between the hockey match between the Korean women's hockey team and Sweden. Sweden pretty much mopped the ice with them, beating them 8-0. But the North Korean cheerleading squad sat in the stands and sang songs. One translated into English as Our Hometown. Another song had to do with the Korean yearning for a unified Korean peninsula. Both are songs that Koreans learned as kids during the Cold War. Kim Jong-bed golf pants sent his sister to the games, who promptly showed up Mike Pence, who embarrassed himself and our nation by refusing to stand for anyone's national anthem. And maybe he's starting the Pence Lives Matters movement. I don't know. It was a real dickhead kind of performance. But Kim Jong-un's sister and this cheerleading squad completely showed him up. And without doing much of anything, made him look like a fool on the world stage. But it was the cheerleading squad especially was a calculated move. They became overnight celebrities, especially with Koreans, South Koreans, just trying to get a glimpse or photograph them. At this point in time, having been separated for as long as they have been, there are even linguistic changes taking place in the way that Korean is spoken. South Korean borrows Western words, especially in things like sport. Those words are not used in North Korean because it is an impure usage of the language. But the game that's being played here is really quite subtle. If North Korea can come to something resembling a separate peace, I said resembling, you know, of a sort, with South Korea, by extension, pushes the United States more out of the loop, which in turn gives us much less footing to work on issues like denuclearization. Kim Jong-un is not going to give up his nukes. And as bad as he might like to be a wartime president, I doubt if even Trump is certain that he could, even idiot that he is, I don't think he can convince, I don't know. But you get the idea. It's worth watching. Just to see how it all plays out in the hands of an administration that is, to be charitable, decidedly incompetent. I don't have a lot of inclination to talk about the release of the Trump budget. No real surprise. It's a real deficit buster. But it's also got cuts in it, deep cuts to things like Medicare. And the question is, what will become of it when the Congress begins to consider it? Meanwhile, because it is More In Monday, and yes, here we are, 33 minutes left in the program, and I'm sorry to say, $285 to raise. I'm sorry, but that's where we are. We'll take a run over to Roxbury Township in New Jersey. And the deputy mayor of Roxbury Township, Rick Blood. No, really. Rick Blood. He jumped on Facebook to show his eternal, undying support for the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Okay, well, you know, maggots do that. But the thing is, he did so in such a way as to make it clear that he's a fucking racist. No, really. Like many citizens, I've wondered and tried hard to understand why Trump has such a remarkable following. It's obvious why he probably should not. Then a friend sent me this raccoon story. It makes no difference about your political leanings. This is just a good explanation of why, or it's as good as any I can come up with. If you really want to know how the majority of people feel, and this applies to both Democrats and Republicans, read below. It says it all. Well, it doesn't, but here we go. You've been on vacation for 2 weeks. You come home and your basement is infested with raccoons. Raccoons. Now, I probably don't have to mention this, but the short form version of that word is well known over a very long period of time as a racist pejorative reference. You've been on vacation for 2 weeks. You come home and your basement is infested with raccoons. Hundreds of rabid, messy, mean raccoons have overtaken your basement. You want them gone immediately. You call the city, 4 different exterminators, but nobody can handle the job. Exterminators. Killers. But there's this one guy, and he guarantees you to get rid of them, so you hire him. You don't care if the guy smells, you don't care if the guy swears, you don't care if he's an alcoholic, you don't care how many times he's been married, you don't care if he voted for Obama, you don't care if he has a plumber's crack. I could add, you don't care if he shows up in a sheet and pillowcase with eye holes cut out in it. You don't care if he goose steps to your door. You simply want those raccoons gone. You want your problem fixed. He's the guy. He's the best, period. Here's why we want Trump. Yes, he's a bit of an ass. Yes, he's an egomaniac. But we don't care. The country's a mess because politicians suck. The Republicans and Democrats can be two-faced and gutless. And illegals are everywhere! Which is kind of interesting, really, because so-called illegal immigration is way the hell down. And it achieved that in the last 8 years, not the last year and a month. We want it all fixed. We don't care that Trump is crude. We don't care that he insults people. We don't care that he once was friendly with Hillary. We don't care that he's changed positions. We don't care that he's been married three times. We don't care that he fights with Megyn Kelly and Rosie O'Donnell. We don't care that he doesn't know the name of some Muslim, no really, M-U-S-L-I-N, terrorist. This country is weak, bankrupt. Our enemies are making fun of us. We're being invaded by illegals. We're becoming a nation of victims where every Tom, Ricardo, and Hasid is a special group with special rights. And it goes on and on and on. So then, he jumped up on the cross and started hammering himself in. He wrote a second Facebook post and said, "Well, I wrote this knowing it would be construed as offensive to some. However, it was not its intent." And then said, "It's out in the public sphere, and such as it is likely to exist in the digital world for quite a while. I apologize for the post. There are those who will take advantage of this post to support their own position, unfortunately, on both sides of the issue." Raccoons. Coons. He called immigrants to the United States coons. And I can promise you that that is as freighted a term as there exists without using the one that, you know what I'm talking about. Jesus. But these things are all over the place. I can hardly sit down. I actually have a hard time weeding these things out from time to time, because there are so damn many of them. Since we were in New Jersey, let's stay in New Jersey. This goes back a little way, but there's a newspaper, the New Jersey Star-Ledger, and it's an online paper. And they took issue with a state senator by the name of Mike Doherty, D-O-H-E-R-T-Y. He is, of course, Republican. And in the course of a discussion about pay parity, about equal pay for equal work for women, Mike Doherty got all wrought. And he said, "Just because I'm a member of a certain group doesn't mean that I can be denigrated over and over again. It's got to stop at some point. It's almost bullying." What was he complaining about being bullied over? Well, as the New Jersey Star-Ledger remarked, when we last checked in with Senator Mike Doherty, he was lamenting how hard it is to be a white man in America. Now, in a record column by Mike Kelly that profiles him as President Trump's lonely cheerleader in New Jersey, Doherty says the U.S. shouldn't take any more immigrants from certain countries, non-European nations that are not part of a Judeo-Christian culture. Get his drift? It's hard to be a white man in America. Which brings us to Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Who was invited, for reasons known best to the organization and making little sense to anyone else. Oh, wait a minute. A note coming from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, he's not a racist. You know he's not a racist. No white men are racist. They're just taken out of context. Coon is a term of affection, you know. No, I didn't. I've never heard that. I've never heard that used by anyone of any skin tone, any ethnicity, as a term of endearment. I did hear a judge one time who was a real live, honest to goodness, no kidding, Nazi. Look at an older gentleman, an African American gentleman with a stellar trial record. And say to him, from the bench, I might add, boy, I ain't seen you in a coon's age. It happened. I think I probably turned whiter than I already am back then when I heard it. But anyway, appearing at a meeting of the National Sheriffs Association, the winter meeting, United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III said, I want to thank every sheriff in America. Since I found in the independently elected sheriff has been the people's protector who keeps law enforcement close to and accountable to people through the elected process. The office of sheriff is a critical part of the Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement. We must never erode this historic office. What's interesting about this is that there were prepared remarks and it didn't contain anything about Anglo-American. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III likes to work Anglo-American into his remarks sometimes on the fly. Attempting to explain the impromptu reference, Ian Pryor, who is a spokesperson for the Department of Justice, said, the term Anglo-American law is common parlance among lawyers and legal scholars, as most law students learn in the first week of their first year. Anglo-American law, also known as the common law, is a shared legal heritage between England and America. The sheriff is unique to that shared legal heritage. Before reporters sloppily imply nefarious meaning behind the term, we would suggest that they read any number of the Supreme Court opinions that use the term, or they could simply put Anglo-American law into Google. About as close to the truth as that gets is the fact that the word we recognize as sheriff, some people think that it has some relationship to harif or sharif. It doesn't. It is the merging of two words in oldie English. One, the idea of a country that is divided into shires. New Hampshire comes from Hampshire, right? Worcestershire? Sauce? Shire? So, a unit of geographic governance and a reeve. R-E-E-V-E. A reeve. You might recall in the Canterbury Tales, one of them is the reeve's tale. And he's sort of like a bailiff or a guardian of some sort. And so a shire reeve is the guardian of the shire. Well, that's an Anglo-Saxon concept. But Anglo-American is a freighted term. Okay, yes, the Supreme Court uses it. But he wasn't addressing lawyers, he was addressing sheriffs. Who probably by a vast margin ain't lawyers. And the Anglo-American common law, well, unless you're one of those constitutional sheriff asshole types, that doesn't have much relevance either. And in point of fact, pointing to the sheriff's office Beauregard did, as a critical part of the Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement, that's almost 200-proof bullshit. You know what the Shire Reeve's job was in merry old England? He was the tax collector. Sheriff of Nottingham, Robin Hood. Poor people brutally overtaxed. In that tale, the sheriff is the bad guy. He's a tax collector. And those concepts here in West Virginia carry over to this day. You've got an assessor, a county officer, who determines the value of the property held by the rubes, citizens. And the sheriff, whose job is to collect it. And based on when he collects it, or she, the sheriff gets a bonus by getting to keep some of the tax collections. Really is quite the antiquated little system. And unless I'm mistaken, I think the UK has largely moved on from a whole bunch of that stuff, but we cling to it, portions of it to this day.
Anglo-American, yes.
And yes, I'm glad he's getting some shit for it. Because he deserves it. But it's not just Anglo-American, it's Anglo-American heritage. You know, like that word they put on their stupid little flags. Heritage, not hate. Kianga Yamada Taylor, a professor of African American Studies at Princeton, said, it was like watching white supremacy work in the name of the law. Meanwhile, Senator Martin Heinrich of New Mexico said, is it still a dog whistle when everyone can hear it? And Jamil Smith on Twitter, I got to know him back when I was when I did a little bit of work with the Melissa Harris Perry Show, said, I can only hope that this remark will provoke others to research that heritage of law enforcement, examine the history of policing in these United States, and consider that what Jeff Sessions labels erosion may actually progress. And that progress begins with rejecting the thinly veiled, if at all veiled, white supremacy of Jefferson Davis, Beauregard Sessions the Third. Jesus. Hey, thanks for jumping in, Glenn. Thank you very kindly. Glenn knocked down that odd $5 there, so that means that we've only got 280 to deal with in the next 13 minutes, $280. So now it's 10 at 28 or 28 at 10 or 2 at 140 or 4 at 70 or 8 at 35 or 16 at 1750. After that, the ciphering gets complicated. Hopefully we'll knock some more of it down. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you so very much. Thank you for being such a friend to the program. And yes, by the way, Ron and Raleigh reminds me, the Jamaican bobsled team is in Pyeongchang. That's a good thing. Ron says, P.S., I like the topless guy from Togo. I thought he was from Tonga. He made a big splash in 2016 in Rio. And he showed up, and he fooled everyone. Nah, I'm not going to do that shirtless business. It's freezing out here. And then sure enough, he did, and he was a big hit. About 11 minutes to go in the program. Let's check in real quick. Check in and see what's on Jim's mind. Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How you doing?
Oh, I'm pretty good. How about you?
Oh, I'm just maintaining. Now, you made reference to Sheriff Shire Reef, literally the king's man.
Yeah. It was a royal appointment, and he was supposed to keep the peace mainly by collecting taxes.
All right. Listen, you mentioned something of whom I haven't heard in a long time, Melissa Harris Perry. What happened to her?
She had a disagreement with MSNBC, and they fired her. And I'm not sure what she's doing now.
I know she had a series of very good Sunday morning shows.
Oh, she was wonderful. She was absolutely wonderful. It was a pleasure being on the air with her.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember. So you're going to head back to the Big Apple, huh?
Yes, I am, and looking forward to it.
Any particular things you're going to look at?
Just take in some museums, a little bit of music, and try to eat some good food as long as my innards will cooperate.
Well, I hope they do, and that will definitely be a gastronomic delight.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
You and your son, that's for sure. I wish
and,
you both
you know, I'll have to make sure, you know, I told him we'll have to make sure he gets an official New York City dirty water dog and a slice of utility pizza.
Well, good luck.
I mean, when in Rome, right? I mean, you eat a hot dog, you got to have a slice of New York pizza, you got to have the A good New York bagel from somewhere, you know, preferably
yeah,
with really,
of course,
yeah, with
course,
really good lox and chopped onions and cream cheese and yeah.
Well, I'm sure you two will have it. Will be a gastronomical delight for you both, and I wish you
but,
well.
But like I said, I'm all I can think about is that Katz's matzo ball soup with the matzo ball the size of a shot put, you know. Jesus,
I heard about that. That's something that would be even too intimidating for me.
Oh, it's I mean, the first time I saw it, it's like, it's not matzo balls soup. It's matzo ball soup. There's one, damn it. And it's monumental.
Well, you certainly get your money for that.
Yeah, but the challenge comes in trying to decide between the pastrami and the corned beef. And the garlic sausage. Oh, the garlic sausage. My God.
Well, I hope that your alimentary canal will be a safe...
Oh,
my
gallbladder is already quivering in abject horror, Jim.
I'm sure it is. Well, I'm sure things will work out quite well. And, do you plan to go there to the Schoenberg Museum? You know, actually, in the floor of the museum are the ashes of Langston Hughes.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes, sir.
Well, we're going to try to wedge in as much as we can, given the time that we have.
Schoenberg, it's almost Austrian, its pronunciation, but it's in Harlem. And I've been reading a biography of him. I just finished it, actually. He had such a life. I had no idea that he had been in Russia during the post-revolutionary period and traveled all over Central Asia. I mean, he really did. I mean, to have come from Joplin, Missouri, to have become, the leading figure of the Harlem Renaissance, it's simply just incredible, his life, actually.
And you know my passion for history. I'm going to try to find a little bit of early American history tucked away, such remnants of it as remain in a city that's been in a constant state of rebuilding almost from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the, there's a couple of areas that I'd like to just kind of maybe walk through some beautiful examples of early to mid 19th century Federalist and Georgian architecture that still exists in New York, no less.
Oh yeah, at NYU, sure there are places in that particular area that are very similar to Georgetown in Washington. Federal homes and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's an area to the south and west of Greenwich Village.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll have to go through Greenwich Village to see some of the stuff. New York is not quite where it used to be back in the days of Max's Kansas City and Studio 54. However, I'm sure that's not where you're going for
you
that.
You sound like you speak from experience, Jim.
I've been there, son.
Oh, did you actually do Studio 54?
I had a friend who worked for Paramount Pictures, and this guy was pretty heavily ensconced a part of the disco scene. As a matter of fact, he was actually contracted by Gloria Swanson, who lived in New York at the time, to convert her films from celluloid nitrate to where it could be, they could be safely handled. And when he took one look at all those canisters in their apartment, they were nothing but goo. And they had to get a bomb squad to get them out of there.
Because wow.
If those things had gone off, because you know how that film deteriorated, it was just a pure nitroglycerin. But anyway, John worked for Paramount, and he knew somebody, and we actually got in one night past the Velvet Rope. And it was something to behold. That's all I can say.
Was that during the heyday of Studio 54?
During the heyday of Studio 54. I mean, what I saw there makes the old blowpipe with the syrups in it just fly out the window. But they had some damn good music, too. They did indeed. If you like disco and stuff like that, and the people you saw there, my God, you wouldn't believe it.
And with you could snowshoe in with the amount of Colombian marching powder in that place, right?
Yeah, they had the big boom with a spoon and all that stuff, and it would lower down, and it was just anything, anywhere, whatever. The best representation I can give you of it is a film called 54 with Mike Myers and Ryan Phillippe, or Felipe. And it's a very good movie. And Mr. Myers just kept shooting his mouth off on TV about how he was making so much money that the IRS took quite an interest in it. And he spent he spent 18 months in Club Fed for that. Steve Rubell, that was his name. There were two guys who headed Steel 54. One was Ian Schrager, and the other was Steve Rubell. And Steve Rubell got his start with steakhouses in New York. And the original building with Studio 54 was some type of 50s TV show. I'm not sure what it is today, but it closed in 86. And Steve Rubell died of AIDS when he was like 46. But the guy knew how to throw a party, and he knew how to get people into his place, and it was the place of places. Of course, there were others called Zenon and Plato's Retreat. And, God, I can tell you stuff about New York in the latter part of the 70s, early 80s. It would curl your hair.
Oh,
done that, you know. I mean, not all of it. Not all of it. And, I remember one night I was in this terrible place called the Mine Shaft, and they were playing this disco version, and everything was disco then. And the lyrics were, "In my father's house are many mansions, for it not so, I would have told you so." And I was in that bar, and I heard that, and I said, "Now you're going to laugh at me, make fun of me, you can throw rocks all you want to," but I said, "My Lord, if Jesus were to come back to earth tonight, he would not want to find me in this place." I'm not kidding you. That's exactly what I said. I mean, when you went in the door.
The thing about the tradition of it is that that's probably the kind of place where he'd wind up. You know, he wasn't hanging out with the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the very fine people.
Well, you know, even Mrs. Kennedy went there one night.
I did not know that.
Oh, yes. Jackie had her fun in New York and stuff like that. And, you know, I saw her in Central Park. You really couldn't tell who she was, actually, because lots of women had hair sort of like hers. And she was just wearing a T-shirt and a pair of jeans, and she had two kids with her. And I knew who she was. And you could go to the International Grocery Store, and I was in the line there. And the guy in front of me was Tony Perkins.
That's one of the beautiful things about New York. You can kind of disappear into it.
And you know, also Garbo lived up there back then in East 57th Street. And I had a friend who was so in love with her that he actually had himself disguised as a florist delivery boy. Knew how to get up to the apartment. He finally made it, excuse me, through her door. Excuse me, with all these flowers. And she had this lady who was her housekeeper who said, "Thank you, I'll take them." So all his efforts were
for naught.
For naught, exactly.
Well, Jim, it's good to hear from you. I got to get out of here. We're right up against we're past the top of the hour. So have yourself a good evening, and we'll talk soon.
Well, you too, and safe journey, all that. Bye.
All right, later. It's our buddy Jim, not too far away, and I got to get out of here. Thanks. Thanks to all our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs and to sorry. A little early for allergies, I'd think, but no. Thanks to Ralphs, and thank you to Glenn. Thank you very kindly. And hope, well, so tomorrow it'll be $590 to keep up with fundraising. One and all, have a lovely evening. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Steve Trash. Remember, do make an effort to see Trash TV and tell those you know with little ones that this is something worth sharing with them. That's Wednesday, 1:30 a.m. even. But probably don't get the kids up for it. Let them watch later in the day. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you very kindly to John Fox, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.